Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The differences between us, whether it's Senator Clinton or Senator Dodd or Governor Richardson or Senator Biden, all of whom I have enormous respect for, the differences between all of us are very small compared to the differences between us and the Republican candidates, who the best I can tell are George Bush on steroids.
That was Democratic presidential candidate John Edwards speaking at the most recent presidential debate on Sunday. I'm Amy Eddings, setting in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and joining me right now is the wife of the former senator, Elizabeth Edwards. Mrs. Edwards is playing a pivotal role in this campaign, even getting compared to a vice presidential candidate, and we haven't even had the primaries yet. Political analysts say her husband has unleashed her as the attack dog of the campaign with her charged rhetoric against her husband's fellow Democratic candidates. We'll ask her about this, and we'll get the Edwards campaign's position on the latest developments in Iraq, calls by the CIA Inspector General to rebuke George Tenet over 9/11 intelligence failures, and the ever-expanding primary campaign. Her book, Saving Graces, Finding Solace and Strength from Friends and Strangers, is now out on paperback. Mrs. Edwards, welcome back to WNYC.
It's great to be with you.
Most of our listeners have been following your battle with breast cancer with a lot of concern. How are you doing?
Actually, I'm doing well. I'm, taking my medicines, getting my infusions, and still no side effects and still no symptoms. So those are all good signs.
Chemotherapy, radiation, all
of
the above?
I take some pills and then also get an infusion of my last one was a bone strengthening medication. I don't know that you, I guess it's some form of chemotherapy. Basically, I do what the doctors tell me.
Right. But you're doing well.
I am.
Good to hear that. Let's talk about Iraq. The top Democrat on the Senate Armed Services Committee, Carl Levin, called yesterday for the Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki to step down. And even President Bush failed to come to Maliki's defense and remarks yesterday. What pressure should the United States be putting on the Iraqi government now?
Well, everyone recognizes finally that the solution has got to be political in Iraq, and we're not going to get a military solution there. And so, the failure of Maliki to effect a conciliation with the Sunnis has been a problem. And I think that we've been in a better in that because we haven't really made those requirements. We have soft requirements for them. There's benchmarks that we had, and they met only a portion of them. And even those, I think, barely made a showing in some of the categories. And yet we continue providing the military support, which we know is not part of the answer. We need to put the kind of pressure, whether it's Maliki resigning, unless that is combined with a real effort to get a conciliation. I think that may turn out to be ineffectual, though I think I have enormous admiration for Senator Levin. But one of the ways John suggested we put that pressure on is that, that we actually start leaving, that we remove a number of troops. I think there was some suggestion in the LA Times last week that that might be what General Petraeus recommended, the removal of a large number of troops. Whether when the report is whitewashed through the White House, it still says that, I don't know. But if we think we need to, it's like threatening your children. Eventually, you have to spank them. If you can't just say you're going to spank them someday, you have to show them you're really leaving, and the way to show them is to actually start leaving in significant numbers.
Meanwhile, Nouri al-Maliki spoke out today saying that the U.S. should stop giving Iraq restrictive timetables. How much should we be holding the Iraqis responsible for the aftermath of a war we started?
Well, I think that what we're asking is for people to come with clean hands and good spirit to the table to divide the authority in this country. I don't think that's an unreasonable request, particularly with their fairly open-ended request that we stay there and help them keep the peace, and that we help them rebuild, and that we help with the training of their security forces, all of which I think we've shown a willingness to do, but they haven't they haven't exerted the political will that they need to. But not, I don't want to just blame Maliki. This has been, you know, the Sunni are very disorganized, and now we see them sometimes, I mean, the Shias and both sides, frankly, and now we see them warring even within factions. So we, you know, it would be great to have a legitimate effort at conciliation. And until we have that, I'm frankly not that interested in hearing Maliki's complaints.
Well, it seems like a real conundrum, because on the one hand, we have this independently elected Iraqi government telling us to stop meddling and to stop giving them timetables, and yet much of the theme of certainly on the Democratic campaign front has been timetables, accountability, put some pressure on. How do you square that with his statement today, leave us alone, let us work this out?
Well, I mean, I think they'd be fine with a lot of the American people to leave them alone. Just bring our men and women home and let them sort it themselves. We know that that's not a practical response. You know, first of all, it's not physically accomplished. You can't accomplish it physically. But I think that, you know, we do need to keep the pressure on at the same time that we're doing what he's asking, and that is to start withdrawing and recognize that this is a solution that has got to be reached by them, not by us. And that we also have to recognize something that the British commander said maybe a year ago. He sort of backed off it after he got a lot of flack, but that is that our presence in there, both the British and the American troops, we're an incendiary in a very volatile situation. We contribute to the heat, and we need, I think that when we withdraw, we actually may, our withdrawal may help that political solution take place.
Elizabeth Edwards, wife of presidential hopeful John Edwards. She's the author of Saving Graces, Finding Solace and Strength from Friends and Strangers, now out on paperback. I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Elizabeth, we are 6 months into the administration's latest strategy to fight the war in Iraq, the troop surge.
The fifth troop surge, we want to say.
Oh, how so? The latest
troop
surge.
They've had a number of surges. I think this is the fifth one.
You and your husband have spoken out against the surge, but Senator Clinton, Hillary Clinton, said this week that the surge may be working, even if it won't make any difference in the long run. And Senator Barack Obama, also campaigning for the Democratic nod for the presidency, also said yesterday that the military escalation was showing what he called limited progress. Do you think the surge is having an effect? What do they know that you don't?
They may know plenty that I don't know. But we've seen increased violence inside the green zone. During this surge, we have seen the legislature attacked inside. These don't seem to be signs of success. I am hopeful always that we're going to see successes. And I know that the men and women who are there are working very hard to make that true. I've not seen any signs that our policy has done anything but gradually make the situation worse and worse. And though the surge may have momentary moments of success, sure hope that it does, we've also seen during this surge so much increased violence that it's hard for me to describe the surge as successful. Mm-hmm. Overall. We, you know, each month it's increasing numbers of American deaths. We may have, with this recent plane crash, crossed the 3,900 number, and with no real signs of that abating. I don't know how you describe this as successful.
We know when your husband was in the Senate, he voted for the bill that gave congressional authorization for the war. Now he apologizes for this vote.
He apologized in 2005 for this vote.
Senator Hillary Clinton stops short of saying, I apologize. But other than those two words, what's really different between your husband's record and her record on the war?
Well, John has never voted for dedicated funding for the war. You know, he had one vote that was wrong, but he has not voted for dedicated funding for the war, and Senator Clinton has. I think the famous $87 billion first supplemental, John made a statement at the time that he would not vote for this supplemental, though he wanted to support the troops, but he thought that to support the troops, they needed the money, but they also needed a plan. And in the absence of the president's plan, he thought that the money itself was not the answer. And he voted against it, and voted against every subsequent request for supplemental funds. The same is not true Senator Clinton, who did vote, albeit late in the voting process, but did vote against the latest supplemental request. But she has voted consistently for them, as has Senator Obama.
We can take a few calls from Mrs. Edwards at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You can also comment on our website. Go to WNYC.org and click on The Brian Lehrer Show. Switching topics to poverty, the Edwards campaign has made poverty its signature platform, and now we're in the grips of a crisis in the credit markets, which is having a negative effect on homeowners who took on high-risk mortgages. Other than intervening in the financial markets, what could the federal government be doing to help people here?
Well, I think there are a number of things. I mean, we do want to make home ownership available to as many Americans as possible. That does mean when you're less credit worthy that the only vehicles you're going to have are going to be, mortgage vehicles where the lenders are trying to protect themselves in some way. So those will always be loans where you're going to see some degree of failure. We want to make certain that happens less by some changes in the law that would, we need national predatory lending laws. John has suggested there be an organization kind of like we have the EPA and we have, the Consumer Protection Agency, and we have different organizations that sort of look after our safety in our food products or on our toys and our automobiles. But no one looks and makes certain that we're well protected in financial documents. John suggested we have such an agency that makes certain that these financial documents, most of which we don't understand as we sign them, they have clauses in them that have implications we may not understand, that we have somebody looking over those to make certain that consumers are as well protected as the banks and lenders. He's also suggested a home recovery commission or agency that would help people who find themselves in those dire straits to make certain that they're both protected in the process and well represented in the process, but also that we're finding ways for both sides to be well served. We also need to make certain that some clauses that currently exist in our home mortgages and other documents that support these loans that we make some of these illegal prepayment penalties, certainly on the level that we've been seeing, don't make a whole lot of sense. If somebody has the capacity to prepay, perhaps they want to refinance at a lower rate. They had a loan where maybe they just started a job, couldn't get a great loan, mm-hmm. had to pay a higher interest rate or an adjustable mortgage. They've now moved up. They'd like to refinance because they might be able to qualify for some better terms. But the prepayment penalty is an impediment to their being able to do so. Obviously, that we should be removing that. The idea is that government should be working to help people realize the dreams. They're still going to have to make the payments. They're still going to have to do the work. But the government ought to be assisting them in making certain that they're as protected as well-represented banks are in this presently uneven negotiating playing field that they're working on.
I wanted to move on in the limited time that we have to the CIA. There was a report released by the Inspector General of the CIA which criticized the agency for missing opportunities to thwart the 9/11 hijackers. The report singled out top agency officials, including former Director George Tenet, for rebuke. Now, Tenet was lauded with the Presidential Medal of Honor shortly after he retired. What should happen to him now?
Well, I mean, I think that, unless there's something I think we do need to expose the failures. So the only way that we can be able to fix them is if we know where the failures exist. Unless there's something, some real dereliction of duty, and I don't know enough facts about this, then I think basically the hit that Mr. Tenet's reputation is going to take is going to be, it may be all the punishment that we'll really see happen. The point, though, we do want to look backwards to correct things, but the important part is getting things right in the future. Now, the coordination, the sort of territorial protection that we've seen between the CIA and the FBI, that's got to be broken down. I think a lot of I haven't read this report, but I suspect that a lot of the things that have happened were missing the handoff of the baton between CIA and the FBI. you know, the FBI is responsible within our borders and the CIA supposedly outside our borders. One of the hijackers came in, I think, maybe from the Philippines to San Diego, and CIA notified the FBI, and they missed the baton handoff, and we lost that. That person lost contact with him, and he ended up on one of these planes. We need them to be less territorial, more oriented to making certain that the job gets done and less concerned with who gets the credit. Now, we saw after 9/11, when they were supposed to come up with a single watch list between the 15 different defense agencies, each of whom, you know, some military intelligence agencies, each of whom have their own watch list, their own list of terrorists. We wanted one list so that the airlines and other portals into this country would have only one list to which to refer to make it possible to really protect us. And after 2 years, we still had nothing. Mm-hmm. CIA blamed FBI. FBI blamed Homeland Security. Homeland Security blamed CIA. Meanwhile, we had no watch list. I always joke, however, it's a little bittersweet to make a joke about it, I have to say, but that if you'd hand those 15 lists to any PTA in the country, you would have had one list within 30 days. It certainly wouldn't have taken 2 years of finger-pointing. All that's got to stop. We also need people in the agency, as we used to have in the CIA, who were ombudsmen, in a sense, to make certain that we were looking at the intelligence and then reaching the conclusions.
Things we should be doing, but yes or no, do you think George Tenet should give back his Medal of Honor?
No, I hate to. Having not read the report, it's really hard for me to say. Mm-hmm. I surely hate to go back and think about all the people in all of history who have gotten awards and start looking backwards to determine whether or not their medals should be
good point. 30 seconds, Mrs. Edwards. You said for the next 11 months, I'm John's running mate, and
that was
political analysts have compared your role to that of a vice presidential candidate. Well, you've clearly shown your breadth and depth of knowledge on a range of issues. Why are you getting so deeply involved as a spouse?
Well, I mean, I care very deeply. It's the reason, the decision to continue this race after my more recent diagnosis, because I believe this is an incredibly important election. We have to get it right. We have to have somebody who has the vision and the policies that that John has. And
thank you very much, Mrs. Edwards. I'm sorry we're out of
absolutely.
Time. That's where we'll have to leave it. Elizabeth Edwards, the wife of John Edwards. I'm Amy Eddings, in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. Stay tuned.